At what point does whiskey stop being worth the price? Whiskey versus cognac versus brandy, and of course, a few scotch recommendations around that 45 to 50% ABV range. What's up, guys? My name is Chris, and you are listening to the Whiskey Noobs Podcast, and today we have yet another Q&A episode of the podcast. This is going to be a special Q&A episode for a couple of reasons. The first one is, this is our 150th episode, so we're gonna, of course, have to take a minute to talk about that. The second thing is that I'm splitting this into two Q&A episodes for a couple of reasons. The first reason is, these need to be kind of quick Q&A episodes. I'm gonna be blasting through these questions, but I will still do some long-form questions. The second reason is, while these need to be kind of fast Q&A episode questions, I want to spend this one talking a little bit about the 150th anniversary of Whiskey Noobs, and I want to spend the next one reviewing Dead Rabbit a little bit so we can have another review this month. Because I have had Dead Rabbit, but I haven't dug into it for a while. I just recently had it on my other podcast, which you may or may not be listening to, called The Perfect Pairing Podcast. I digress. I just had it on there, and I was like, I should really have that on Whiskey Noobs and do a deeper dive into it. So that's what we're doing. That is why this episode is so special. So, 150th episode. We will talk about that with one of these questions, because there's a question that kind of just lends itself to talking about how far we've come and where we're going and what the plan is moving forward. It's going to be quick, though. I'm not going to like bore you guys. Every 50 episodes, I'm not just going to sit down and be like, here is my manifesto. I'm gonna make it kind of quick, but check in for those of you who are curious about what's going on behind the scenes. All right. Without further ado, I am going to jump straight into these questions. I will just remind you very briefly that you can submit these questions on the Instagram page every Wednesday. I post a picture to my story. You can click on that picture and add a question. You can submit it through there, or you can jump to the front of the line by joining the Patreon page and submitting the questions through the Patreon page. And we do have a few patron questions, which I will answer right now. Okay, that was a mouthful. Let's get started. Our first question. One question I have is, at what price point do you feel that you start to see diminishing returns? I'm seeing so many new releases from craft distilleries with price tags of $120 to $150, and even for an 8-plus year barrel proof, I'm just not sure if it's worth it over some of the $80 to $100 offerings out there. I'm curious as to what you think on this one. When does extra money just stop bringing in a much better product? A lot to unpack here, and an excellent question, so I had to make this one of the long-form ones. Okay. At what point, what price range, what dollar amount do you start to see diminishing returns? Well, there's two things going on in this question. There's first, a dollar range where you see diminishing returns, and there's second, craft whiskey seems to be more expensive. So they're kind of two different issues that play into each other, which is why I think you asked the question the way you did, because you kind of see how they interact a little bit. So, in general, I always say my rule of thumb is after $100, diminishing returns. After $100, I almost did a video on this, which I still might. After $100, my reviews aren't really how much quality am I getting for this amount of money? What exactly am I tasting? After $100, me reviewing it is basically me saying, is this amazing or not? Because if it's not amazing, it's not worth that amount of money to me. If it is amazing, we're not really splitting hairs about 110 versus 120 because we're up into the already kind of ridiculous price range. For me, that's already into the kind of ridiculous price range, although nowadays it seems like everything's getting into that price range. But the second half of this question about craft distillers, because you see a lot of craft distillers, they got young stuff that you're paying a lot of money for. You mentioned 8 years and barrel proof. Is that even worth $100? There's kind of two ways for me to approach this. First, my first reaction to that is age and proof don't necessarily dictate what a whiskey's worth. I think a great example of that is the barrel pick that I just recently did with Hard Truth, which is, by the way, still available. But it's an expensive barrel pick, okay? It was, I think, $96 a bottle. It's only a 2-year whiskey. And so, like, right away, it's like, oh my gosh, that's so young for that amount of money. People don't realize that a lot more goes into the value of a whiskey than the age. I think sometimes we miss that. So older whiskey just has to be more expensive because you lose whiskey every year. Some of it evaporates. And you're also storing it on property longer. It's inventory, which is expensive. So older whiskey has to be more expensive. But that does not mean that younger whiskey has to be less expensive. So, for example, with my barrel proof, it's one of the most complex, delicious whiskeys that I've had in a long time. I fell in love with it. I'm pretty sure I bought 4 or 5 bottles of it. I was so obsessed with it. I knew it was 2 years at the time, but like later on, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a 2-year whiskey because it's so insanely tasty. So you can just have that. And I don't just mean, oh, it's tasty like they put some wild finish on it and it tastes like fruit juice, like some overfinished whiskeys can be. No, I mean it's complex. It's got a little bit of a dryness, but a lot of flavor. It interacts with the flavors, and the longer you sit with it, the more the flavor changes. All these different factors that normally you'd be like, that must be a very expensive whiskey. And that's why I always bring it back to blind tastings. So I wanted to take a moment to say that, like, that is why I always bring it back to blind tastings. I don't really care too much about what's on the label. I care a lot about the experience that I'm having while I'm drinking it, for the most part. And now I'm going to go completely against what I just said, and I'm going to talk about craft distilleries for a second. This is totally a personal preference thing. I personally give craft distilleries a little bit of a break on price. I am willing to pay a little bit extra for the craft guys for a couple of reasons. The first reason is making craft whiskey is more expensive. If you're not a large established distiller, making whiskey, getting into the whiskey game is very expensive. Whether you have to source it or whether you're making it yourself, it's expensive. And I think by saying that they can't be more expensive, if you're like, I'm going to hold them to the same standard that I'm going to hold the big distillers, you could create a couple of problems. The first problem is you could create the issue that only big distillers are capable of making whiskey that's worth the money. Or the second problem would be, okay, maybe there are some new craft guys that are capable of making the whiskey for a lower price. It's probably only people who had a huge bank account or a trust fund or something, because it literally takes that level of money to get into the industry and not charge an arm and a leg. So if they're right off the bat, like, I don't need to make very much money off this whiskey, they had a huge financial backing. And even some craft distillers who do have a huge financial backing still have to charge a lot of money in order to stay above water. So for me, in the spirit of not monopolizing the whiskey industry and encouraging these craft distillers, I will pay a little bit more for craft whiskey for a small distiller, for somebody who's trying to make it. That being said, I will not throw caution to the wind and pay anything. And I've recently on TikTok and on Instagram had a couple of reviews where I had to be like, I'm sorry, this just isn't worth it. This is $45, but I can go buy Four Roses single barrel for $45 or $50 maybe, and it's so much better than this. Sometimes I have to say that. But a lot of the time, if it's close, if I'm like, this is a little bit overpriced, but it's a brand new distillery, they've been around for 2 years, then I'm like, okay, that's fine. I think Hard Truth's a great example of that, where I don't even think it's overpriced necessarily, but I think they only were able to put out young product because they're a brand new craft distillery, or at least at the time they were. And they made that young product delicious. Like, they made it unique and complex and delicious. And so that's why I fell in love with the brand so quickly, because I was just like, you're putting out this young of product and it tastes this mature and complex and different from other things that I've had, way different from other rye whiskeys that I'd had. And I really like that. And so then, yeah, I'll cut them a little bit of a break. And I've had that with a couple of other craft distillers. And usually I'll put that in the review. And if I think that this is on that line where if it wasn't craft, would I pay this much? If I think it's on that line, I'll usually say that in the review. And I've said it before in the reviews that I post in short form. So that's a long answer to your question. But I guess to summarize, I would say price for me is a lot more about the quality of the whiskey. In general, around $100. Once you go beyond that, I start to see diminishing returns. And in general, craft whiskey kind of has to be more expensive. And a lot of times I will cut them a break. I don't blame you if you don't. I'm not like everybody should cut craft distilleries a break. I don't blame you if you don't cut them a break because you want to buy what's going to be good for the money. And a lot of people, especially if you can't afford to spend the money that some of these craft guys are charging, I totally get that. And that's why Four Roses and Buffalo Trace, even though they're kind of hard to get, and Heaven Hill make all these delicious products that are not very expensive. So very long-winded answer, but that's a very good question and also a little bit of a complex question. So I wanted to really take the time to answer it properly. All right, next question. This should be a little bit more straightforward. What's the difference between whiskey versus brandy versus cognac? Great question. So I see that brandy and cognac are actually kind of gaining a little bit of popularity. Rum seems to be as well, and obviously tequila is really having a moment right now. But let's talk about brandy and cognac specifically. Whiskey, so what's the difference? So let's start with whiskey. Whiskey is where you take what's known as distiller's beer, which is a fermented mash, and you distill it. That fermented mash is made from grains. A lot of times those grains are either barley or corn or wheat or some mix of those. Barley or corn or rye or wheat or some mix of those. Sometimes some other creative grains, things like that. But that's a lot of times what your whiskey is going to be made from. Now, that's whiskey. Might not be news to some of you guys listening, but what might be news to you, brandy. Brandy is basically, you take a fruit wine, so like I think a lot of times apricot brandy is popular, so you could take like an apricot wine, or maybe, I don't even know, apple brandy. I think you take like an apple wine. You take that wine and then distill that. So whiskey, you create basically a high-strength beer or a low-strength wine and distill that out of grains. Brandy, you take basically a wine out of fruit and you distill that. And so that's the difference. And it gives it totally different flavors. As you might expect, distilling grains versus distilling fruit, totally different flavor profile. Now, what's cognac? This is an interesting one. So cognac is just brandy from the cognac region of, I believe, France, if I'm not mistaken. It's from a specific region, and then that makes it cognac. So there might be more specific rules to it. I'm not like a brandy expert, but that is the difference between brandy and cognac. It's a regional thing. A similar thing happens with champagne, if I'm not mistaken. There's a specific region for that. And, you know, Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey. It's just bourbon whiskey. Straight bourbon whiskey from Kentucky. Tennessee whiskey. It's got its own specific rules, but it's in Tennessee. So the cognac region, maybe that's a little bit more abstract than the state of Tennessee, but imagine that you're European and you don't really know what Tennessee is and you haven't really heard of it. Then you're like, what's Tennessee whiskey? It's whiskey from Tennessee that follows specific rules, of course. That's what's happening with cognac. I can't tell you the last time I tried a brandy, but I did recently have Bacta 1928. I can't see it from here. I think it's 1928, which is a rye whiskey that is blended with Armagnac and Calvados, both of which I believe are brandy. I could be wrong about that, but I think they are. So I thought that had a really cool, unique flavor. So I might try out some brandies. I really, let me know your guys' thoughts actually about this. I think I'm going to branch out and do some more reviews of other spirits, not necessarily regular, like I'm not going to make it the new regular content, but I kind of want to branch out just for my own sake. I'm really curious to get into some more spirits. So maybe I will, but I'd really be interested to hear your guys' feedback, especially if you are on the Discord on the Patreon page. Hop in that Discord and let me know your thoughts about that. All right. Next question. What are some good scotches in the 45 to 50% ABV range, which is 90 to 100 proof? This is a good question because it made me think. I had to go over to my scotch selection and really look around. It made me realize I have a lot of low proof scotches. Maybe because scotch is pretty expensive and then high proof scotch is really expensive, at least in my area. So I did grab a few though. We've got Glenmorangie's 14-year Quinta Rubin, which is a port cask finish. Delicious. And it is, I can't read from that far away. Hold on, I got to lean. 46% alcohol by volume. That's a really good one. Very approachable. 46% still isn't crazy high proof, but it's approachable. Super fruity, super flavorful. I really enjoyed that. And then we've got Boonahabin 12-year. I forget that one. Let me lean. 46.3% ABV. And that is an Islay Scotch, but it's not peated, and it has a nice kind of briny, sour fruit taste to it that I really enjoy. And then we've got Brooklady, the Classic Laddie, and that is 100 proof, 50% ABV, and that is also a Islay Scotch that's not peated, if I'm not mistaken, right? Right. Okay. Yeah. I had to look at the label real quick. It's an Islay Scotch that is also not peated. And it has like a nice creamy, stone fruity, malty flavor that I really enjoy. So all three of those are three that I actually love and personally revisit pretty often. And I didn't even realize that they just so happen to be three that are in that proof range, which might make sense because I'm not too big into 80 proof stuff anymore, which I still am sometimes. That Dalmore was really good. But, you know, I coincidentally started liking the ones that I had that were higher proof. All right, moving on to the next long form question, and this is the one where we're going to pause for a minute to talk about the 150th episode. How much does the Patreon cost? So this is a great question because I wanted to take a moment to thank the patrons, because the Patreon has helped in a ton of ways. And obviously it's hard for me to say how much of the things that I'm able to do come from the Patreon versus coming from brand deals versus coming from other things. But what I do know is that steady Patreon income is immeasurably helpful. It has helped so much. And I can pretty firmly say the new podcast that just came out. So like, what's the idea behind the Patreon, right? You guys want to see me be able to come out with more content. And I am able to do that now. And part of the reason for that is the Patreon page, because I truly don't think without the Patreon, I would be able to continue the podcast that I'm doing right now, the new one, the Perfect Pairing Podcast. I don't know if I would be able to do it for very long without the Patreon page, because I started it up and I was enjoying it, but I have to smoke cigars. Long story short, I live in Ohio. It's really cold, and I don't have a studio that I can smoke cigars in. So I'm working on building kind of a mini studio that will at least shelter me from the elements, but also will serve as a cigar lounge studio, essentially, out of a new shed. And I don't have this shed yet. This is just a plan. I might not even end up doing this, but right now that's the plan. And that is truly, truly going to make a huge difference with the Perfect Pairing Podcast. And I think if I wasn't able to do that, odds are I wouldn't have made it super long on this podcast. I probably would have got partway in and realized this is really difficult. This is very inconvenient. I am loving doing the podcast, by the way. We're having a lot of fun, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it if you haven't listened to it yet. But the big but is it's hard to smoke cigars, and right now I'm having to do it in my garage. It's making my garage smell like cigars, and there's all kinds of other downsides to doing it in a garage, one of which being garages are very echoey, so I've been having to be very careful with my audio. And yeah, at any rate, new podcast, partially due to the fact that the patrons have been so supportive on the Patreon page. So thank you so much to you guys. It's truly, truly hats off to you guys. I'm not wearing a hat right now, but hats off to you guys, because it's been so helpful. You guys are truly making a difference in the content that I'm able to provide you, along with other upgrades like a camera that I was able to get that I think is going to help a lot for like distillery tours and give you guys a lot better idea of the distilleries. Just general stuff like that. So thank you. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the Patreon page does have a Discord now, which has been a blast. You can join the free Discord and you can just join the general chat where we all talk. Or you can then join the Patreon page and you can get into some locked chats where we talk about more specific things. There's just like a general patron community chat. There's also a cigar chat. There is a latest, like, pick up your latest scores of bottles, those sorts of things. So I highly recommend you go check out that Discord and or Patreon page. The Discord should be at the link in my bio. If it's not yet, then it will be soon. And it's definitely attached to the Patreon. So if you join the Patreon, then you join the Discord. So all of that is to say, how much does the Patreon page cost? I want to take a moment to plug that. Oh, and before I forget, I want to say thank you to Kim Coons for joining the Expert Noobs tier. Expert Noobs get a shout out. Thank you so much, Kim. You have been around for a long time on the Patreon page, like one of the A1s, and I seriously appreciate it. The support, once again, just so, so grateful for that. Okay. How much does the Patreon page cost? So there's a $3 tier, a $5 tier, a $10 tier, and a $20 tier. I think I just did all those right. So $3 is your noobs, and basically you're going to get a couple of small things, and you're going to be able to submit the patron questions where you get to jump to the front of the line. The next tier is the novice noobs, not seasoned noobs, the novice noobs. And in that tier, you're going to get some added behind the scenes, things like that. The third tier is the seasoned noobs, and with that tier, you're going to get some merch. You're going to be able to vote in polls when I have questions about where to take the podcast, what to do next. There's actually a Discord chat for that now, too. You're going to get to participate in that. And then the fourth tier is the expert noobs, where you get this shout-out. You get more merch, and you get the first tier access to the barrel pick. So then after expert noobs, each tier gets the next access to the barrel pick. A lot of times, especially I've seen with other people, but this definitely happened with my first barrel pick. The less expensive barrel picks sell out very quickly. This most recent one didn't, and that's okay, but it's a little bit more pricey. But the less expensive ones tend to sell out rather quickly. My first barrel pick sold out before it made it to the public, which thank you guys for that if you bought a bottle of it. And so yeah, that's another perk is the tiers for the barrel picking. So that's all the different tiers and prices on the Patreon page as of the recording of this podcast. And I wanted to take a moment to show some gratitude for all the patrons have done. That being said, I just mentioned all the new additions that you guys have helped to pay for and all the new content you're going to be able to see. So I'm going to take just 60 seconds here and talk about the 150th anniversary of Whiskey Noobs. We've come such a long way. I mean, we literally started with like 5 to 10 people listening to this podcast as I produced it from my apartment, my one-bedroom apartment, while I was in college. I was just finishing up college. And I can't even believe how far it has come, and I'm so thankful to all you guys. When I tell you that I started with nobody listening, I mean I started with nobody listening because I had nothing in the industry. I just decided this is what I wanted to try to do, and I went for it. I was just another guy, like truly just another guy, and I started trying to do this. And I am so grateful for how far this has come. I'm so grateful for everybody who has even just liked the content. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as double tapping your screen. You guys have made a huge difference. If you haven't left a rating or a review yet, I would ask that you do that because those help so much as well. And yeah, that's just my thank you to you guys for how far we've come this 150 episodes in. Some things that are to come. Obviously, there's a second podcast now. Trying to ramp up the content creation. I'm working on getting better at letting go of things and delegating them to other people, hopefully more and more as we move on, so that I can bring you guys more and more and more content. So a lot of very cool things to come. I'm very excited about it, and I could not be more grateful to you guys. All right, I think that leaves us time for one more long-form question. I'm going to lightning round a few of them out. There were a ton of questions this time around, so thank you guys for that. But I apologize if I don't get to yours. So let's go with one more long-form question, and we'll round it out with just a few lightning round questions. This next long-form question, I'm already setting it down, and I haven't even read it out loud yet. I'm like in my head already trying to answer it. What 10 to 15 bottles of bourbon to start my collection? I want a variety, not necessarily the best 10. I like that you specified that, by the way. But given that you haven't given me a dollar amount, I'm really going to wing it. I'm going to look at the bourbon behind me, and I'm going to just go at it here. So let me get a few in my head. Okay, I'd start with some inexpensive staples that cover a wide flavor spectrum. So I'm going to say I'd start with Wild Turkey 101, Old Granddad Bonded, Evan Williams Bottled and Bond, Elijah Craig, and Cooper's Craft Barrel Reserve. That's 5. All right. So that's going to get you a bunch of base flavors where you can learn a lot about the flavors, and they're all relatively inexpensive, but they're all really good. Then you're going to want to crank it up a notch. These next few kind of depend on your palate. I'm going to say Four Roses Small Batch Select, because I like that one. It's got a nice punch to it. I'm going to say, what was the one? I just forgot already. Personally, I really like Noah's Mill. You know what? No. Scratch those two. I'm going to go with Craft for the second 5, because I went with big names for the first 5. I'd get yourself something from Penelope, something from Barrel, something from Nulu, something from Redwood Empire. What's another good craft brand? I know no matter how many I say, I'm going to leave some out, and I apologize. There's so many good craft brands out there. I'm going to make my fifth one Middle West Spirits Bourbon because I really enjoy that. And all those other brands I mentioned as well, those first four of the craft, they have so many options that that's what I like, is like you can go there and you can pick something weird, something unique, and you'll get something unique. So I really like that. Like I might do Penelope Architect. That's a finished bourbon, but it starts off as a bourbon and then they finish it. So that's got something different going on. There's a lot of options, but those are just some recommendations to really cover a lot of different bases right off the bat. Okay, let's blaze through some lightning round questions. I'm going to try to handle these ones very quickly. What does a toasted barrel do for the flavor profile? All in all, it gives it a more woody flavor. If you've had a lot of woody whiskeys, you might know what I'm talking about, but you get some of that oak, some of that cinnamon spice, kind of, not necessarily cinnamony. I'm just going to say it makes it more oaky right now because I need to move quick on these lightning round questions. Good question, though. What's one thing you don't like about your channel but you don't feel like you can change? That's a good question. Ooh, that's going to make me think. One thing I don't like about my channel but I don't feel like I can change. Okay, I don't like that I don't get to branch out too much from whiskey. Usually when I branch out from whiskey, the algorithm does not like that very much. I've tried to do some stuff that's just like fun, I guess. Like I did a blind tasting of pumpkin spice lattes. I thought that was fun. The algorithm doesn't like that too much, which maybe I can change that, especially over time. But right now, that's something I wish I could change. I love whiskey. Like I want to keep it mostly whiskey, but I just like to branch out sometimes, and the algorithm doesn't like it when you do that. My favorite 10-year bourbon bottle. I can't think of one that's exactly 10 years off the top of my head, but I'm going to go with Copper and Cask Small Batch Series Number 1. That's 8 years, pretty close to 10, and it was one of my favorite bottles of 2023, probably. The best all-around basic bottle you could drink straight or make a cocktail? Probably Evan Williams Bottled in Bond. Am I a Barrel or Starlight fan? If so, which ones are your favorite? Barrel, meaning Barrel Craft Spirits, by the way. This person spelled it correctly, but you can't hear the spelling. So I am a Barrel fan. I haven't had Starlight. I really want to branch out and try it. Ones that are my favorite from Barrel. My favorite from Barrel is probably the bottle that brought me to Barrel, which is Barrel Seagrass, which is a finished rye that is absolutely to die for. What is your preferred proof on a neat bourbon, no ice or water? Right around 115 usually. Sometimes a little lower. Sometimes like a 105 or 110. Any non-podcast goals for this year? I would really like to keep getting in better shape. That might be a kind of a lame goal. And I also want to keep cutting back on the drinking. That's kind of a lame goal as well. But I want to be able to do all my reviews and everything without doing too much drinking, which usually means cutting back on like weekend type drinking. So I'd say that's a goal for me. And then also definitely getting in better shape. I ran out of time a little bit in 2023, so I'd like to go a little bit harder in 2024. A whiskey that I've tried that didn't taste good, but was so interesting it was worth it. I don't have any specific one in mind for this. Maybe Nika Coffee Grain Whiskey. It's a Japanese whiskey. It's incredibly interesting and cool. Is it worth it? I don't really know, but it was definitely not what I would consider good or like tasty. Bourbon newbie, enjoying Angel's Envy. What should be my next step in the journey? You could try Legent, which is a similarly priced, no, actually maybe a little bit cheaper, finished bourbon as well, because Angel's Envy is a finished bourbon. But this has a little bit more of the spice to it that'll bring you a little bit closer to the non-finished bourbon. Have you ever considered having your dad on as a guest to review Gentleman Jack or some other Jack Daniels? This is an OG fan. This is a real fan because they know that my dad loves Jack Daniels. I have considered having him on before. I don't know that he would necessarily want to be on the podcast. This is one of those things that the people around me in my life aren't necessarily as into being behind a camera as I am. And not just him, that goes for a lot of people. People have asked about a lot of different people in my life being on the show. But I would definitely be open to it. I love drinking, different bourbons or Jack Daniels with my dad. All right, rye whiskey suggestion that leans more towards bourbon. Gotta be Hard Truth's Sweet Mash Rye. It has just a unique flavor to it, and it's a rye whiskey that definitely has bourbon-type notes. The barrel pick is probably still available as of the recording of this. You can get it at the link in the show notes. Does bourbon go bad once you open the bottle if it's not stored in direct sunlight? No. As long as there's still a good amount of the bourbon left in there, it'll last a very long time. Can you go over the purposes of different char levels? Absolutely. Chemically, different things are happening in the wood. You're going to expose more sugars, and also you're going to get more surface area with more char, so you have more interaction with the whiskey. The best way to check that you're not overpaying, honestly, read some reviews, listen to some reviews from myself or other influencers that you trust, and take your best stab at it. If you think you're not overpaying, if you think it's something that's right up your alley, try it and then decide for yourself if it's overpaying. That's probably the best way. And don't let anybody ever tell you overpaid for something that you like, or don't let anybody tell you that this is worth so much money if you don't like it. It's totally up to you. New collector tips, possibly MSRP websites and other collector groups or tools. I can't help too much with rare stuff or buying online because I don't do that too much. I think if you're a new collector, my tip would be to buy barrel picks from people that you trust, because barrel picks are, even if it's not from an influencer that you trust, even if it's from a store, like a store pick, if it's from somebody whose palate and recommendations you trust, a lot of times you can get a pretty good pick. What should we do as a bourbon community to lower bourbon prices? Honestly, I would say stop spending secondary prices, shopping at places like bourbon museums where stuff is super overpriced, and focus on the craft guys who aren't charging an arm and a leg. But keep in mind, like I said earlier, you might have to pay a little bit more for the craft stuff. And last question, how long did it take for me to develop a palate for whiskey? Great question. I don't think I necessarily had a good, reliable palate until probably like a year in, maybe a year. Yeah, I'd say about a year into it, I had a good palate where I could do decent tastings. I could do blinds and pick out what was what in the blind. And then I would say like 2 years in, like as early as 6 months or as recent as like 6 months to a year ago, I started realizing my palate had really started to kick into high gear, like to a level where I was like, whoa, I can taste things in food that I couldn't taste before, all those sorts of things. But that's a lot of time and practice really flexing that muscle. So the muscle being just my palate. So it doesn't come necessarily without any work, but it to me was worth the work. So that's that. All right. I know I had to fly through those, but I really appreciate everybody who submitted a question. Thank you guys so much. I will be doing a review of this dead rabbit in the next episode. And yeah, thank you for submitting your questions. Thank you to all the patrons once again. Please consider just clicking that link in the show notes and checking out the Patreon page. No pressure. And if you don't want to join the Patreon page, I just thank you so much for being here. It's very helpful. And this is a blast. And I love the momentum that we're building behind us. Thank you guys all for listening. I will leave you with learn to drink, drink to learn. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Whiskey Noobs. If you need more Whiskey Noobs content in your life, make sure you check out our Patreon page in the show notes. And if you like the show, please make sure to leave a 5-star rating or review. It only takes a couple of minutes, and they're way more helpful than people realize. If you want to do tastings alongside the show, make sure you join the email list by sending an email to whiskeynoobspodcast@gmail.com with a subject line that says email list. You'll receive monthly emails with a list of the whiskeys that will be featured throughout the month so that you can buy them ahead of time. You can also find more Whiskey Noobs content on Instagram @whiskey_noobs and on TikTok @whiskeynoobspodcast. Once again, thank you guys for listening. The Whiskey Noobs podcast does not support underage or otherwise irresponsible consumption of alcohol.